Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film, a film podcast from Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Sitting across from me is the one and only Rodrigo Lopez.
Hey, man.
Sitting to his left, my right, Steven Schleicher.
How does that work?
I don't know. We're facing weird directions. And all the way to everyone's right besides Rodrigo, even farther than Steven, is Matthew Peterson.
Okay, never refer to me as far right.
Well,
I'm on the eastern portion of the state.
Okay.
Yeah, the right part of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only if you're facing with the map page pointing north.
He's in Topeka's east coast.
Yes.
Ethnocentric.
All right. This week we have some Star Wars topics to talk about.
Star Wars. Woo! Wonderful
Star Wars. They're back with a vengeance.
I think Lando gets a bad rap.
Well,
with a revenge.
And they're going to come back and rise and awaken and some other analogy in reference to all the other titles. We're talking about digital recreation.
Okay.
There's a rumor floating around that we could be bringing an actor back from the dead to be in a future Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of lambasted a lot of CGI this last summer.
It
was kind of subpar across the board for a few exceptions. One thing that seems to be holding its own for the most part on the occasion that has been used is 3D complete body redos. We saw it in Terminator Genesis with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Let's see, we saw it in Benjamin Button a while ago. Tron did it.
Oh yeah, Sky Captain in the World Tomorrow used what's his name? Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence Olivier.
Yeah.
No, not Lawrence.
Peter
of Arabia.
Tool.
Yeah, Peter O'Toole.
Not Peter O'Toole. Lawrence Olivier.
They used him in Sky Captain World of Tomorrow.
Is that what they did to bring back Wall Street Michael Douglas for Ant-Man?
No, that's something completely different.
Well, it's similar.
It is similar, but it's not a total 3D. It's not a 3D double. So essentially, what they're doing is they're going in and painting on and mapping Michael Douglas's face, and then.
Which is essentially what they do with those doubles,
except
because they
not,
have
except it's not
somebody.
3D. It's not like a 3D object, right? In these digital de-aging process, it's not a 3D model of the subject.
Sure,
you're taking,
but
essentially,
it is like one person walking around.
It is
and
Michael
then
Douglas.
They basically
Michael
put Michael Douglas's head on
no,
Michael Douglas.
It is Michael Douglas walking around, and then they essentially go in and paint out his wrinkles.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Is this the same method they used for double the twin action in Social Network? Or is that a 3D face replacement?
I don't remember. I'd have to go back and watch the special features on that, because I know it's a second person.
Yeah.
But right. I could have swore they had him do the acting twice and then just cut the head out and put it on the other guy's head.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But how about like Paul Walker's brothers playing Paul Walker in Furious 7? Was that like...
Well, I think they just hired Paul Walker's brother and said, hey, your brother died.
Yeah, but
we want
I mean,
you
they put
be
Paul
in a few
Walker's
scenes.
Face on,
yeah,
on
yeah,
Paul
yeah.
Walker's
yeah,
brother
yeah.
at least twice is what I understand.
Yeah.
This is not what they did in Parent Trap, from
no.
what I understand.
No.
This is not
no.
what they did
no,
in
no,
Parent
no.
Trap.
That's split screen.
That was a little bit different, not
now,
as high tech.
What about bringing back Philip Seymour Hoffman for the Catnip Evergreen movies?
Well, we haven't seen that yet. And
I thought he was in the last one that came out.
He was,
but that was all stuff that
he was
shot.
He was all shot. There was only, I believe, one or two scenes of him left in part two of Mockingjay. And from what I understand, that will be 3D replacement.
Okay. Yeah. But here's the thing, though. I mean, you know, everyone's talking about this like it's, oh, this is some wondrous new thing. Well, we don't know, first of all, how they're going to use Peter Cushing in the role as Grand Moff Tarkin.
Which is what we're all talking about.
Right. I mean, we don't know if he's going to be, hey, we need someone to stand in the background and walk through a scene, or kind of cut to a shot of him looking stern or something like that. Or if he's going to be walking around, talking, interacting with everyone else, a la Roger Rabbit, you know, because those are two different things, to have a set dressing piece or having someone interacting with other characters.
God, I hope it's just like Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Grand Moff Tarkin? Please.
Yeah.
Great.
So, I mean, there's two things, but they've already used digital doubles before, and we've already talked about it before. I mean, if you look at what was it, the episode 2 or 3 of Star Wars, where they had to take Dooku and Yoda and they had to fight. Mm-hmm. And
that's all 3D.
Christopher Lee was just too, I mean, he's too old to do those flips and tumbles like he used to back in the day when he was a World War II spy. And so they recreated him and had him jump around and do all that stuff. So that everyone kind of looked at and said, okay, that's got to be fake, but it still looks cool. So we don't know what their plans are with
but the ethical part of this comes in where no matter how they use him, mm-hmm. he is not Peter Cushing alive anymore to be like, right. hey, why don't you just put me in the movie? Or, hey, why right. are you wanting to do this complete recreation of me for this thing? So that is where the ethical part of this comes in, is like, who has rights to his likeness? Who's taking care of this? Who's signing off?
More than
who's
likely.
This? But is it right to even do this in general?
So in answer to your first question, the first question is, who has the rights to his likeness? It's going to be his estate. His family will have that. This was a big deal back, I want to say back in the late 80s, early 90s. There was a big to-do when they had Fred Astaire. They took old clips of Fred Astaire dancing and they inserted a Hoover vacuum or something like that of him dancing around and vacuuming with this stuff. And the family was like, we're okaying this. But then film purists and audiences were like, how dare you do something? It's like, right. well, the audiences, the family, the estate who was left to deal with image likenesses and rights of Fred Astaire said it was fine to do. Hoover said, hey, it's fine to do. And they did it. And really, since then, I think it's a family estate thing in these cases.
I think Zach's question, though, is getting to the point where what if, you know, if theoretically the man who played Grand Moff Tarkin, whose name escapes me,
Peter Cushing.
What if Peter Cushing theoretically had some major philosophical issue with J.J. Abrams or with redoing the role? Is it ethical to put his image in without him having any ability to say yay or nay on it? But
well, do you know for sure if he had any kind of ethical issue with J.J. Abrams?
That's the point. We don't, and we can't,
probably,
and we never will.
That's probably why everything was put into the estate of the family to deal with those matters. And if the family said, hey, you know, this is great, but J.J. Abrams and husband, father, whoever, uncle, didn't really care for mm-hmm. him that much, we're not going to allow it. End of story.
I think it's a psychological issue, because Peter Cushing, the human being, could choose to take whatever acting role he chose and choose to eschew whatever acting role he chose. The equation, it does naturally fall to whomever owns his likeness rights. But then you ask yourself, do they necessarily have a quote-unquote right, not in the legal sense, because clearly if they have likeness rights, they do, to make a decision in what Peter Cushing postulates.
So let me ask you this, Matthew. Let me ask you this. So H.P. Lovecraft passed away a long, 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 long time ago. Correct? Okay. Correct?
I presume so. I don't know when he passed away.
All right. Long time ago. So the publishing rights to his books are now controlled by a specific publishing agency. Okay. Now, that publishing agency can say, hey, we want you to use, it's okay for you to turn this story into a comic book or this story into a movie and this kind of stuff into that. What if H.P. Lovecraft didn't believe in online internet movies and thought that they would be an abomination? Does H.P. Lovecraft have the right to say nay on those kinds of things, or have those rights been acquired by a publisher to do with what they want to do with those works of H.P. Lovecraft?
Well, you're asking a legal question when the actual moral quandary is a metaphysical question.
No, this is simply a legal issue.
It is not.
It is not a legal issue.
Who owns the rights? Who owns the rights? Do those people who own the rights have the ability to do the things that people want to do with that likeness, that work, that whatever? Do they have that ability legally to do it?
I'm not asking
if they have
that. They have the ability.
Then the answer is yes.
I said that. I said legally they have the right. But here's the thing. When you say this is not new, it's not new because there's a term for it. And the term is over 50 years old. And that term is fake shimp.
Mm-hmm.
Shimp Howard, Sam Horowitz died in 1955 and still appeared in like five Three Stooges movies posthumously through the use of basically old footage and body
doubles. Editing and yeah.
Right. Sticking characters in after the actor has died is an old tradition. And again, I'm not saying that it's a legal question. I believe that whomever owns the rights to Peter Cushing's, whether that be some company who purchased them, whether that be his family, whether that be his wife, they have every right to use his likeness rights. The question that's coming up and the thing that sticks in people's craw is, say, Audrey Hepburn in those chocolate ads last year. Every time I saw one of those, I went, gosh, she's a really, really beautiful woman. Oh, right. She's a really, really beautiful deceased woman. I don't know how I feel about them using her image, her likeness, you know, using whatever reputation she has to sell me a piece of chocolate.
Mm. Rodrigo, what are your thoughts?
Interesting. Because people will go and buy a poster of Audrey Hepburn and have no problem. People will go and buy a stand-up or a lunchbox that has Marilyn Monroe on it. Someone will go and buy a t-shirt with John Wayne on the front. How's that different?
They presumably took those photos, made those images while they were still alive. They chose to be a part of the media, which was then adapted into a t-shirt or a lunchbox. Whereas creating an entirely new media using someone else's face does
still
bring
a movie.
Up
Still
I understand,
moving.
But it brings up a moral question. It brings up the question, and it is not as simple as you say, because just because something is perfectly legal to do does not necessarily mean that audiences aren't going to have an issue with it. Look at Jar Jar Binks. It's similar but entirely different in that Jar Jar Binks, the character, is considered to be a franchise breaker. When you took that character, they have every right to take that man's face and put the big poofy head on it and turn it into a weird kind of sideshow attraction. But the audience responded to it poorly. It's not
this
precisely
is really, this
the
is
same
two
thing.
Different, this is two different things in that case.
Well, we're actually having two different discussions. You and I are having two entirely different discussions. We have been.
No, I understand that you say that there's a moral question of it, but I don't see where the moral issue arises. If it's an audience's issue that it's a moral problem, then that's an individual issue of whether this is morally right or not. That's an individual decision. That's not a business decision. That is not a legal decision, because those things are very cut and dried. Morals come from individuals or from a society, but
those businesses operate in that society.
Yes, but whether right? I think
so
is something... There are many things that I think are morally reprehensible.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that you think that they are. That doesn't mean that Zach thinks they are.
But here's the thing. Those things that you feel are morally reprehensible, do you support them monetarily?
It depends. We've talked before about H.P. Lovecraft. I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft.
Sure.
But I think that him being a huge racist is a big morally reprehensible problem.
Sure. But what I'm getting at is what you're saying is they have the right to do it,
mm-hmm.
and it makes business sense for them to do it.
Right.
I think it might not make business sense for them to do it. You said it yourself. There was those vacuum cleaner ads, mm-hmm. and the estate said, let's go. Hoover said, let's go. And the audience...
And 30 years later, we're still talking about it.
Sure. And the audience responded poorly, mm-hmm. right? The money, that money with little eyeballs and mouths, that's all they see you as. Mm-hmm. That money responded poorly.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I don't know if they responded poorly to sales. That's the thing we don't know. They responded poorly to the commercial, right?
Sure.
But that doesn't
necessarily equate
to sales. And I don't think...
Well, it didn't help.
Peter Cushing is not going to play, the digital double of Peter Cushing is not playing a major role in Rogue One.
Well, what if he is, though?
Yeah, what if he's one of the major villains?
I'll bet you $100,000 that he does not play a major role where he is on the screen for more than 10 minutes out of the entire 125, 150-minute film.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's on there for 5 seconds... or if he's on there for the entire movie, the act is the same.
Well, legally, business-wise, right, creatively,
right,
all above board. If somebody has a problem with it, then they won't see the movie. But sure, I'm going to bet you they're not going to give a crap once it comes to the movie.
Well, they might.
Well,
I don't think so. I think it'll
Well, let me give you an example.
Sure. No, I believe there me, I understand where you guys are coming from.
Sure.
I don't see it as a moral issue.
Sure.
This
okay.
is a
well,
business
let me,
issue.
Let me give you an example so you can see it as that moral issue, perhaps, if I can do it.
No, I see there where you guys are coming from the moral issue. I totally understand
then
where
let
you're
me tell you.
From.
Then let me tell you a story.
Okay.
There are 1,000, possibly more, pictures of Steven Schleicher on the internet.
Oh, sure.
What if somebody puts a picture of you and then underneath attributed to you a horrible caption?
Yeah, but
I think I'm so glad they canceled Legends of the Dark Knight.
Well, first of all, it's not legal for them to do that.
Right.
So end of story right there.
Sure. That doesn't matter. It's on the internet now.
It is now a legal matter.
Sure.
And doesn't matter if it's on the internet or not, is now a legal matter that will be taken care of in court.
Sure. But it's parody.
Not really.
Sure it is.
No,
you love Legends of the Dark Knight.
No, I don't.
Now that
actually.
Quote is attributed
actually.
To you making
that,
fun of you.
That is a quote that's been attributed to me by someone else.
Right.
As a joke, which was never attributed to me.
Right. No, so it's parody.
Right. But
so it's defensible. So let's say...
No,
let's
if
say,
we looked at parody, I think you would find that that's totally... doesn't hold up to parody.
I think you can make the case that it can. So
it
now it's tied
very,
up in court.
It would be very
right?
hard to. Yes.
How does it make you feel?
Well, it's a legal issue.
Sure. How does it make you feel?
Are you a robot?
Doesn't make me feel anything.
Okay.
I mean, someone wants to use my likeness illegally. Let's settle this in court.
Sure.
Am I happy?
But now
about
you
it?
Have
probably
to. You
not
can't work on a site when you're in court.
It.
You had to be with your family in court. There's money involved. You got to get a lawyer.
Do you know, lawyers take care of this stuff.
No,
I don't have to be in court.
They're going
to
call you to be a witness.
They're
going to
call me
Congrats.
To be a witness
you're
for one
be there.
Afternoon.
Well, one afternoon of no work. That makes you upset.
The lawsuit will take care of all of that.
Okay. So, next example. What if they do that after you die?
I'm not around. It's up to my estate to take care of that.
Sure. So you wouldn't care?
I'm not around. I cannot make that decision.
See, not everybody is going to take that same thought process. I mean, metaphysically speaking, there is a question of the utilization of someone's likeness or someone's face is an issue. And if I were to go and buy, you know, a Rod Serling T-shirt, there is a part of me that would be a little creeped out that I'm buying a Rod Serling T-shirt because I'm putting the face of a dead man on my enormous body, first of all. I don't usually wear T-shirts with faces, but let's say we do. And I think that what it really comes down to is it is uncomfortable to me because we are making decisions, the likeness holders, the rights holders are making decisions about a public perception of a real person. Peter Cushing was a human being. He was not merely the actor who played Dracula. He was not merely the actor who played Grand Moff Tarkin. He was a human being with all sorts of hopes and aspirations and things that we don't know. So when you say, do I know that Peter Cushing would or would not have a problem? I don't. That makes it worse. Because I don't have any idea whether I can say for sure that Peter Cushing would have any problem making a paycheck off of an episode 7 theoretically. So the little part of my mind that takes these things apart and, you know, looks at them and goes, wow, this really is a weird moral quandary. Yeah, it's kind of a niche question. It's one of those things that you think about on a Sunday afternoon when you've read the paper and there's nothing else to talk about. It's not really a huge issue that's going to make me try and boycott J.J. Abrams or Lucasfilm. But it is bothersome. It is troubling, and it does raise questions. You know, one of those immortal questions, what is the measure of a human being? If Emma Stone were to pass away tomorrow and somebody put her in a film, you know, doing things that Emma Stone would never have done, would I be troubled by that?
Well, let me ask you this. Let's look at okay. Heath Ledger, for example. Heath Ledger sure, died okay. before that movie was released.
Sure.
Should the studio have released that movie?
Well, he had shot all of that movie.
Yeah,
at that point. Yeah.
But I mean, There was a huge creep.
That movie
there was a huge creep factor for why that film became popular, because people want to see, let's see this Heath Ledger guy who died. That was a big thing.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure.
I'll give you a harder one. Brandon Lee was killed making The Crow.
Yeah.
And the shots that killed him were not in the movie, but his character was shot in the film because that's part of Eric Draven's mm-hmm. backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And then his face was digitally superimposed on another actor for right. certain films.
Right.
I was troubled by that in 1994. I still love that movie. I still watched that movie. I'll watch it now if you put it on. But yeah, I think there is a question. And I think to some degree, finishing a film that a Heath Ledger or a Brandon Lee or a John Wayne died during, it's almost like a tribute. It's like Paul Walker halfway through Furious 7. He passes away in the terrible accident. His friends and his family come together and finish the movie he was working on. And they dedicate it to him and say, okay, this is for Paul. This is finishing the work that he could not. That is one thing. This is 20 years posthumously. Now, we are going to take a role that Peter Cushing was probably well paid for in 1977.
And probably
and we're going
continued
to take that imagery.
And probably more than likely continued to receive residual rights, and his family and estate probably continue to receive
and
residuals
for things,
that.
Who knows how things
went
down
about
in 1977?
We don't know
though.
This.
And hold on. We read comics. When people don't get their likenesses, they change it just a bit. So that's that person, but it's off.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If they can fully recreate a person and say, mm-hmm. Peter Cushing's family, like, no, he can't be in Star Wars, okay, we're going to change his hair color and give him a mole. It's still going to be Peter Cushing.
Well, so
then, but
so
that's
the
world
thing.
We're getting to.
No, here's
that's
the thing.
What we're getting to.
If the estate says no, you can't use his likeness, then why use him at all? It's going to be the same thing with this upcoming young Han Solo adventures. They're not going to de-age Harrison Ford by 75 years.
Well, because
they're going to find somebody who has a young Peter Cushing lookalike.
They could do that now, and the rumor is they're not going to.
But
they could do it.
This is all rumor. That's why I don't like the rumor mongering.
It's not the point of the rumor. It's the point of this is happening. It could be happening in a giant world-shattering franchise.
So
it is something we have to talk about.
Here's a movie I think you guys ought to watch, and I've mentioned it many times on this show. It's called The Congress with Robin Wright Penn. It's exactly what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Where at the end of Princess Bride, the studios bought her digital likeness so that she could remain on film the same age that she was in The Princess Bride. This is where it gets in this weird real world fake kind of stuff. But in exchange for selling off her digital likeness rights for 75 years or whatever it was, I forget how many years, she got paid handsomely for it. And then as the contract is running out, there's this huge discussion of she's got some medical issues with her son, I believe, and she has to decide whether she's going to continue doing that or not. This is, if you want to see where we're going to, Zach, watch The Congress.
Oh, I know.
Because that's where we're getting
to. Okay, so what happens when this happens and they just slightly start changing people's likeness so everyone knows it's Peter Cushing, but it's not technically Peter Cushing?
I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about right now, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's this perfectly legal way of doing things that is going to put people off.
Well, in fact,
what Schleichertron is not acknowledging...
No, I'm acknowledging
is
it.
That
I just don't agree with it.
People get put off by it, and that can actually have a business impact.
I'm not saying that you guys are wrong. I'm saying that I acknowledge it.
I know you are
it
not saying.
Not...
Your input number three says you are not wrong. I am just saying.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're not wrong.
But here's the thing.
For me, it's not a big deal. In fact...
There you go.
In fact, going back to the question about the Katniss movie, I am almost 100% certain that they had high scans, digital scans. In fact, I think after Heath Ledger, they made this in many contracts, that actors have to have high-resolution digital scans of themselves made should they die during the production of the movie so that they
even if it's not for that reason, any given action movie, they're going to do that because now half the stunts are digital.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've seen scans of Wolverine's face, scans of... You know, Tom Cruise, every movie does a new scan of Tom Cruise, and then forces them to use a younger one.
This is specifically so that if the actor dies during the production, they can still continue to make the movie with with a digital version of that.
Right. But I mean, let's take the example of Game of Death, 1978, several years after Bruce Lee dies. They took chunks of a movie that Bruce had made. They took, and this is the part that really skeeves me every time I watch the movie, footage of Bruce Lee's actual corpse in his actual casket at his actual funeral, tied it all together with a body double and some weird plot twist, and of course, at one point, legendarily, a cardboard cutout, and they put this whole thing together and they released it as Bruce Lee's quote-unquote last film. I've seen this movie a couple of times, and it never fails to creep me out when they get to that sequence, because my brain goes, okay, well, this is just the character Billy Lowe. And then the other half goes, no, 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 that is really a dead Bruce Lee there. Is that even, I mean, is surely it has to be legal. They made a movie. There's no legal question. But God, it's creepy. And it makes me feel creepy for watching it. And it makes me question the mindset of the people who put that in the film as part of my entertainment in what is essentially, you know, a big dumb kung fu chop sake movie. And I think that that has it, obviously, you know, I don't question that it's not a problem for you. I think what I'm questioning is the fact that you've been saying it's not a problem for you. And so by extension, it shouldn't be a problem because they legally have the
rights. I didn't say that. I said for me, and I started that conversation when Zach asked the question. I said, for me, this is a legal thing. End of story.
But it's not simple, and it's not end of story.
For me, it is. Because for you, it may not be, and that's fine.
Well, let's move on to more Star Wars news, shall we? More technology in Star Wars.
what's Star Wars-ery?
More Rogue One. They are talking that Rogue One could be shot in the ultra-wide format, much like Quentin Tarantino just shot The Hateful Eight on.
Yeah.
You know,
now,
we
did,
talked.
Quentin shoot his actually on film? Or,
oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he did.
That's because Quentin thinks anyone who uses digital is
fascinating.
It lives in a cave.
Which is fascinating because if you guys have been listening to Robert Rodriguez recently as he was promoting the second season of
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Dusk Till Dawn. He talks about the time that he and Quentin were doing
From Dusk Till Dawn.
No, From Dusk Till Dawn, and also the Grindhouse film, where Quentin wanted to do his all on film.
Well, Rodriguez was Planet
and
Terror.
Rodriguez's was all video, and how in the end for that film you couldn't tell the difference. Right. And it's real funny that those two are really good friends, but they have a huge split in whether you should be as Quentin Tarantino is, a film purist and only shoot on film, or if you should use whatever it takes to get your project done.
And I want to know if what he did, because there's an aerial shot in the trailer. We're going off shoot from Rogue One really quick. In the trailer of Hateful Eight, that is an aerial shot that I would, if it's a helicopter, it is damn close to everyone. Otherwise, they're shooting on a really long lens. It didn't look like that long of a lens. It's like, did he attach a film camera to a drone?
I would imagine it's small. I mean, not small. I mean, they are now putting...
It'd be a huge drone to shoot on 70 millimeter.
It would be. They can certainly do it.
Yeah. So that was like, really? You're going to use a drone, but you're not going to shoot digital?
Or the other option is kind of like in The Birdcage, where... it starts out on a crane shot as you're leaving the house, and then there's a digital edit in there that you don't see where it transitions to the helicopter shot.
Maybe it's a cable.
It could be that.
Oh, yeah, it could be a cable.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Anyways, so they shot on 70 millimeter. Mm-hmm. We talked about a lot of the crazy film formats that popped up throughout the years when we were going back through the Zach on Film films. And it seems like maybe... they're starting to come back, the bigger, wider formats. They're starting to shoot these things. You know, IMAX, it kind of was this offshoot thing, but it continues to grow steadily in box office numbers and release, and people are touting how they're shooting on, you know, huge IMAX film. Nolan shoots all of his thing film. Star Wars is shooting on huge IMAX film.
Let me ask you a question, Zach. Why do you think that IMAX is growing in popularity as beyond just the aspect of let's go see this little novelty, you know, 20-minute film, to now we're going to watch Hateful Eight or
right.
movies like Rogue One.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, these IMAX ultra wide showings are becoming the new spectacle that 3D was for in that hot minute.
Do you remember a while ago where George Lucas and Steven Spielberg had some thoughts on where the movies were going?
Oh, I remember.
I think this is very much like what they were talking about, mm-hmm. where the movie itself is the spectacle, and you're going to a huge theater with a huge screen to enjoy part of that spectacle.
Yeah,
sure. Look, nowadays, you don't even need a television
right.
to get TV shows mm-hmm. Or movies. So theaters, movie makers, really, movie production companies are positioning themselves as a higher end product,
mm-hmm.
as an experience rather than what you go do on a Saturday night necessarily, or what you go do on a Friday afternoon. You know, it's bigger than that now. Like, they are like, look, it's the movies kind of thing, because nobody wants to shell out that much money every weekend, mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe two times a week or whenever. You know, it's like, you think about people going to the movies. People used to go to the movies constantly, and mm-hmm. that has kind of decreased.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, you know, you see it all the time. Somebody comes out with something, any given product, then their competitors come up with like something similar, and that product goes back and tries to place themselves as the fancy version, as the premier version, as the best version.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what movies are doing as far as entertainment, I feel, is you can watch an episode of Community on your phone, but if you want to know what it's like to fly through a canyon before you hear Samuel L. Jackson drop the F-bomb 15 times,
mm-hmm.
then you go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the gist of what Quentin Tarantino and Spike Lee are both getting at, where it's like, everybody's watching stuff on these little tiny screens, and movies
right.
were supposed to be meant to be enjoyed on something huge and big. And, you know, today, your biggest screens are your IMAX screens. I mean, there used to be mm-hmm. a time where you would have a 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 foot screen theater, but those days are gone thanks to the multiplex.
Which takes me to kind of an issue that is very close to that, which is they're shooting in the super wide screen meant to be seen on these super wide screens.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, a lot of people are going to experience these movies in normal size screens,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which actually mm-hmm. means that the movie is going to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to watch Hateful Eight with these huge black bars above and below it, whereas if it was shot in a less panoramic format, they'd actually be able to see more movie.
Mm-hmm. Because the closest IMAX theater to us is Wichita.
Yeah.
Unless the Cosmosphere starts showing Star Wars anytime soon.
I wouldn't suggest going to the Cosmosphere to see it, because they don't know how to align their projectors.
Oh, so it's like Hayes. Great.
Yeah.
So it's a drive to
There's three good projectionists in Kansas. Two of them are in Wichita, and one of them's on the Kansas City, on the Kansas side of Kansas City.
Yeah.
So, but the thing about the Spielberg Lucas thing is, I think we're certainly going there,
Let me bring another thing up that Lucas and Spielberg said that ties directly into what you're talking about. They said movies would return to being this big spectacle mm-hmm. event that you would spend a premium amount of money
right.
on, and those movies would stay in the theater for an extended period of time. They're already saying that these IMAX films of Star Wars are already locked up for at least one month in the IMAX theaters.
Well,
and IMAX theaters is a premium cost experience.
Well, I don't
Jurassic
know how much
World,
is it.
Jurassic World returned to IMAX.
Yeah.
They had its mm-hmm. run, which was mm-hmm. longer than
mm-hmm.
usual.
Mm-hmm.
Then it left, and then due to popular demand, it has returned to select IMAX theaters.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Speaking of the numbers, because it's going to be a numbers thing on how much IMAX continues to be used, and it seems like there's an uptick. It's really hard to track dollars for IMAX. I figured out they just kind of lump it in there with overall, unless someone reports on it, which is really annoying. But I did find a piece talking about the Jurassic World box office numbers for opening weekend, and they said IMAX theaters accounted for 44 million of the half a billion, which a small percentage there, but it is a significant chunk of that, because you have to go to a completely different theater generally to see it.
it is a significant chunk, but more importantly, if you don't see it in terms of what Jurassic World brought in, it's mm-hmm. like the next three
yeah.
like movies of the summer lumped together. It's mm-hmm. a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I have a question.
Yes, right, Matthew.
We, and I don't know, I think on the MSP as well, we've talked about 3D and 3D conversion of movies, mm-hmm. and specifically how 3D conversion is a terrible, horrible gimmick that must be destroyed. When I look at a super, you know, Panaflex giant wide Ultra Panavision movie,
mm-hmm.
what makes it different in terms of a visual gimmick? Per se, rather than, you know, this is a movie in 3D, this is a movie in Ultra Panavision 85 millimeter.
Okay, so there's a couple.
Where's that line of demarcation?
Well, it depends on, you know, what you want to take in or not. So first of all, the nice thing about shooting in IMAX and 70 millimeter and up, and one of the reasons why 70 millimeter became a very preferred format for the both special effects and for high-end production or big tentpole movies, is because you get a cleaner image on that 70 millimeter print or mm-hmm. on that IMAX print, because the size of that negative is so large, you're capturing more detail, you're capturing more resolution, you have a smaller grain pattern than you would on a 35 or 16 or whatever else. And so when you're looking at something projected in that, it is a much crisper, cleaner, sharper experience than what you would normally get to see. So because of the cost of 70 millimeter and IMAX, those kinds of things were reserved for quote unquote special movies. Mm-hmm. And so there's that aspect of it for you, is that you are getting a more pristine, clearer image than anything else.
But in the way it's going to be presented, it won't feel any different than the gimmick of 3D. It'll still be, go watch it. And this other thing, you're going to pay more money, but it'll be better. And in some cases it is cleaner and mm-hmm. sharper, which is the exact opposite of 3D
right.
when they do that. But it's in the way it's going to be presented, it's even already with Quentin, it's like, go watch it and it's 70 millimeter. It'll be great. Right. It's right. The marketing side is going to feel exactly like the gimmicky nature of 3D.
And it is, because, you know, you always have a mainstream and then you have things that attempt to deviate mm-hmm. from the mainstream for whatever reason. Again, if you take that step back, it's like Quentin Tarantino saying, well, this is art.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
While somebody else, well, I don't know.
Seth Rogen making Green Hornet.
Sure. While Seth Rogen making Green Hornet wasn't even involved. They were just like, you're shooting it in 3D because 3D is where the money is, mm-hmm. right? Both of those decisions for completely different reasons, right. but we as the audience are going to experience it in much the same way. It is just this little technique that's supposed to draw eyeballs, and it's going to move you away from the mainstream. Just like The Hobbit being shot in super telenovela vision.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just like...
that's unnerving, by the way.
Yeah, it kind of is. And just like, you know, just like stuff shot in native 3D, mm-hmm. just like stuff that has been 3D transmogrified. I'm using nothing but technical terms, by the way, on this show. All of that stuff is going to come across to the people watching it as like these fancy bells and whistles. To us,
right.
Jaded types as a gimmick.
I will say,
unless you happen to really like that gimmick, and I think we should still recognize it as a little bit of a gimmick, even if you enjoy it.
Sure.
And maybe vice versa. Maybe go in and say, well, this is a total gimmick, but I'm going to see the worth of it.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, as people who've listened to the show a long time know, that there are times where I've said, you know, this was a good use of 3D.
Sure.
I think was one of the Thor movies that we went and saw. And I said, I actually thought that was a good use of 3D, and they didn't overdo it, and it was a nice touch. I think then there also becomes that gray area that maybe Matthew is asking about, between when does 70 millimeter become part of the art, and when is mm-hmm. converting a film that was shot in 2D like Green Hornet and converting it to 3D right. a gimmick and sure. not art.
Right. right. And
when
I think there's really a certain
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. That was a use of, there's a certain movie
right.
that I think benefits from this.
Sure.
And
right.
Hateful Eight is one
right.
big giant vistas mm-hmm. of Telluride, Colorado. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to see all that. You don't want to see it in My Dinner with Andre. You don't want to. There's no reason to shoot that in 70 mil.
And that's why I said traditionally 70 millimeter and IMAX has been reserved for these quote unquote special experience films, things that are supposed to have a higher elevation or an artiness to it.
And really, originally, they were basically IMAX. Well, I don't know if originally, but IMAX got placed on the reason why there is an IMAX screen in the Cosmosphere and why you'll find them in museums and planetariums is because they were basically for documentaries, right? Hyper realistic,
immersive,
like super high frame rate kind of things, where you're inside the ocean, or ooh, it's like you're actually going in that person's mouth. Look out,
right?
You know, that kind of thing.
Right. And what I will say I appreciate about Quentin doing it in 70 is that he shot the whole thing in 70 millimeter because there's a thing that really annoys me, and Christopher Nolan did this in The Dark Knight, and when they shoot 80% of the film in 35 and then shoot their good big action scenes in IMAX, and in fact, in the middle of those scenes, some shots will be 70, some will be 35, and you watch it at home, and you're like, hey, it's jumping back between widescreen and full screen. Why is it doing that? Well, because of the IMAX.
I think a number of our listeners had written in when they went to go see... The Dark Knight, whichever one. I think it was Dark Knight. Where they were watching an IMAX and suddenly, you know, the screen pops bigger during the big chase fight sequence and then pops back smaller during the rest. And that was somewhat annoying. So
absolutely.
I appreciate Quentin Tarantino saying, hey, I'm doing this for the art of film. So I'm going to use the expense and shoot this in 70 millimeter.
Right.
Now, we haven't seen this movie, so we don't know everywhere that this takes place. But from what I've seen in the trailer,
so much of it is going to take place indoors,
in
a house, right?
More than 50% of it is going to take place indoors, which brings up the sacrifice, because we see oftentimes where they look at a television show like Breaking Bad, where they really, really, really wanted to shoot on film, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, well, you can't, number one, you can't shoot in Riverside if you want to shoot it on film. If you want to shoot it on film, you're going to have to go out to Arizona. And it was the smartest move that they made because of those cost issues. And I'm going to bet that a lot of this film is going to take place indoors for the Hateful Eight
for
a cost issue.
Right.
Let's keep the set locations down.
Sure. And so you're going to end up with two options. Either you are going to see things expand and like the aspect ratio kind of expand and shrink, or you're going to end up with, and this works well because Quentin Tarantino does this a lot anyway, a lot of extreme close-ups when people are talking so that their face actually takes up a lot of the screen, or a lot of this little lodge when two people are talking and they're both on screen. There's just going to be so much space around them.
Like those,
there's that door and there's the bar and there's that boar's head on the wall and there's that banister.
But it's the detail that you're going to be able to see in that. I remember like Hamlet came out in like 96, and that was, I think, one of the last, up until recent times, one of the last movies shot in 70 millimeter. And it was a big deal because they shot the entire thing in 70 millimeter because of the look and the feel that came from that.
Sure.
Which is a lot
was
different
that
than shooting.
The Branagh Hamlet?
No, that was...
The Gibson Hamlet?
No, that was the Branagh Hamlet, yeah. And I was trying to think because I was thinking who was in it that really stood out for me. Well, it had everybody. It had Billy Crystal and it had Jack Lemmon and Robin Williams and all these people in
Julie
it.
Julie Christie was in that and she was...
And it was, everybody just talked about how it looked, and it just looked fantastic. And whether it was taking place inside or whether it was a giant crowd scene or whatever,
and that's the
look of it.
To a certain degree, if someone is going to do something in like this giant super Panavision stuff, you do want it to be an auteur who is, you know, to a certain degree in love with that sort of shooting thing, right?
Here.
You don't like 3D. A lot of the times where 3D fails is when somebody who may or may not love the source material, may or may not love the movie they're making, is then forced to shoot it in 3D, or is then forced to transform, you know, what is essentially just a slightly action-packed romantic comedy into something bigger so that 3D is justified. Mm-hmm. At least this way, the form is following that function, right?
If you haven't already looked, you should disclose this. But since 1970, including the year 1970, how many films have been shot on the Super Panavision 70, 70 millimeter, 65 millimeter, the Todd AO format?
Guessing? 70?
In that format.
No. Since 1970?
Since 1970. How many movies?
Six.
I hate to Price is Right him. I was going to say five.
Ah. Matthew is the closest. 11 movies since 1970.
Come on down. You're playing Plinko.
And you know why that is? My wife hates widescreen movies. You put a black bar at the top and bottom, and she will growl at you the whole time.
Okay, but there's a difference between widescreen and...
But she really she growls depending on the aspect ratio.
So here are the movies: Airport, Patton, Song of Norway, The Last Valley, Far and Away, Baraka, Hamlet, Samsara, which was a really cool documentary. If you didn't see that, The Master, Movies for Your Ears, and then The Hateful Eight. That's just in the U.S. That's not counting European films. That's just in the United States.
The Master was shot on 70.
The Master was shot in Panavision System 65. So it's that same.
Airplane was too.
Yeah. Not Airplane.
Airport.
Airport. The airplane was shot in...
Airport is actually not a bad movie. And, you know, this does bring up the question, not just in terms of expense, but would you go and see Final Destination 6 in 70 millimeter and say that it improves the experience of Final Destination 6?
No, and again, that's why since 1970, there have only been 11 films shot in this format.
You say that, but... Like, I immediately started thinking, it's like, I think the Final Destination franchise could do something interesting in Super Panavision. I mean, imagine just how much longer you get to see that bus before it takes out that lady.
Right.
So much longer.
Honestly, their 3D outing was pretty terrifying and used the 3D grossly, but entertainingly, you know, it's something where, again, if it weren't a huge cost issue, or if it weren't we can only open in the 19 IMAX theaters issue, it be something that would improve the average, you know, kind of film that's not a film, it's just a
okay
movie.
So also keep in mind that there is a difference between something shot in IMAX and something shot in 70 millimeter.
Sure.
So there's a huge difference there. So there are many theaters around the United States that can show 70 millimeter films without being an IMAX theater.
Right. And in fact, even in an IMAX theater, and it doesn't matter because the screen is so big.
Yeah.
But even in an IMAX theater, the IMAX aspect ratio is actually closer to 3:4 than to the Super Panavision. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is almost a square.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So do you think this is going to be
Vendetta in IMAX, and it was amazing.
I'm sure. Do you think we're going to continue to see an uptrend of these major blockbuster films shooting on this ultra wide format to kind of push people more to the more expensive ticket theaters?
The second part of your question was, Zach, specifically about, we started getting into the film reason for this, but the second part of your topic for this area was that there's the digital version of Panavision 65.
The rare, the Rogue One, they said they're going to shoot with the anamorphic 70 lens, but this is so film nerdy. Anamorphic 70 lens, but it'll be filmed on
the digital Arri Alexia film.
Right. So let's break that down for people that are just listening in and not expecting to be killed by the nerdness.
Quentin Tarantino 70 millimeter film, super super expensive.
Right.
I mean, film super super expensive. Keep
very
that in mind.
Big wide square.
Very
on
big
his film strip.
Yes, 70 millimeters diagonal. So that's like. Mm-hmm. Huge.
I don't know. Right. We don't do metric over here.
Yes. Rogue One, 65 millimeter widescreen Arri Alexa digital cost goes down tremendously.
Sure.
Because it's still a digital
still
camera.
A massive
it's still
amount
a massive
of information.
Amount of information. Yeah. But also keep in mind too that we are at a point in right now where I can go out and I can spend $6,000 today if I wanted to. I could go out today and spend $6,000. And buy a video camera that will shoot 5K video.
Sure.
Right? Yes. That is almost the size of 70 millimeter.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And there are
cameras that are way out of my price range that can shoot 8K already without a problem, which is bigger than IMAX.
It was
insane. You saw it, right?
I saw 8K display at NAB, and it was that wall, and it was crystal clear and sharp. It was insane.
And so... Yes, we will see more because if they're doing it in digital, It's super easy to do.
Right. So the important thing is basically same lens, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Same ability to capture these huge panoramas.
Right.
But the difference is Tarantino is shooting in the classic film stock for that.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then Rogue One is rumored to, I mean.
No, it's for sure being shot.
Oh, is it for sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's going to shoot in that same thing, but it's going to do it digitally.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is a cost issue. But there's also, again, if you want to look at the differences between film and video, and this is, again, part of that, the aesthetic of film, part of the art part of film, mm-hmm. is that film has a
right.
grain to it.
Mm-hmm.
That every single frame of film is going to look different because of the distribution of the silver halide crystals on the film that give it its quote-unquote life. Digital pixels, no grain. It doesn't change.
Did I tell you guys about how I just watched something in film when I went to St. Louis? It was the first time we went to the Arch, and they show a documentary of it being made mm-hmm. underneath it, and that thing came on. I'm like, holy crap, this is film being shown on film.
Yeah.
And it was like, it blew me away. Like, this is so different. It's crazy if you actually see something shot on film and then shown on film.
And projected.
And since we've started doing this, there's nowhere I can go to watch something projected on film.
Sure. Right.
So it was like, holy crap.
It's a different experience.
You can tell a difference. It is really nice to look at.
A lot of people are not going to be able to tell
no,
the difference.
No, not at all.
Right? And that's that's important to remember. So from a cost reason, it makes sense to not shoot it on film.
Yeah.
But the important thing to remember is that film looks the way it does because of what it can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Film looks the way it does because of its limitations.
In mm-hmm. fact, if you
the
remember,
moment that you start improving on that, it becomes video. It starts mm-hmm. looking like real life, and it doesn't look like that dream you're barely remembering, which is what people like about mm-hmm. film.
If you remember about things film. When in the video class that you took with me, Zach, we should have done a whole section on how to make your video look like film. And the first mm-hmm. thing you do is add a bunch of shit to it so that it looks like film. And that means degrading the image mm-hmm. so that it looks like film. And it's like, what?
I mean,
that doesn't make sense.
The thing is, like, the basic reason why does film look the way it does, why does video look the way it does, is actually not even the grain. The grain is a big aspect of it. But it's the progressive
range,
versus
progressive,
interlace.
Yes.
The moment you start interlacing things, then suddenly the movement becomes too smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like real life. All of a sudden, you're watching the news instead of watching, I don't know, Robin Williams inspire a bunch of young men, you know, through poetry and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, our local cable provider just went full digital, and I was watching the local news in like full HD for the first time in my life, and it was eerie. It was too immediate. It was too real. Well, and I think that you guys are all going to yell at me, but I'm going to say this. I think that we will see more people shooting in the wide formats, the 70 millimeter, the Panavision, whatever you want, for the same reason that we're seeing so much retro vintage clothing. It's going to be part of the new aesthetic, at least for a while.
Oh, sure.
And especially since Tarantino did it in a real high profile fashion, people are going to say, I'm going to be like Tarantino and I'm going to make Saw Part 7 on 70 millimeter Panavision.
Well, I say, you know, good luck to them. Keep in mind that Arri Alexa camera is still, what, $50,000 or something like that?
You know, I haven't decided to price out an Arri Alexa any.
Well, let me look up.
It's a Saw movie. We got more money than that in the special effects, man.
Well, there's a reason why for years, when you watch the end credits of a movie, they say cameras provided by Panavision because you can't afford the cameras.
Right. Panavision has to basically let you borrow their cameras.
Yes, you have to rent them and borrow them, yes.
Which you can still see.
Personal favor from Joseph Panavision.
Yes.
Which is fun if you want to start figuring out what they're shooting the films with. They still put the camera company at the end, so you can tell if this was shot
on
Sony
Red,
or on Red or the Arri Alexa or the, I guess I'd say Aria. So if you want to be, if you want to start being a film nerd and a camera nerd specifically, you stay to the end of the credits, you'll get to see what they shot the film with.
Well,
yep, and
actually,
it's always good to do that.
And that's the thing, you stay till the end and you see what they shot the film in and what they edited it with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that, you know, from as an editing nerd, to see what they're editing in. And, you know, it's like in lower levels, it's like Final Cut Pro took over everything. But I have, it seems to me that I never saw a decrease in Avid. Like,
people have continued to
mm-hmm. edit film in Avid this whole time.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It is still a behemoth of the thing. But, you know, there's always Final Cut and Premiere trying to nip at its little
And in the prosumer and consumer stuff, those guys are definitely walking around.
Well, and but keep in mind, too, I mean, Avid is, I can't tell you that it still has the number one hold on that because people are like, well, all television shows are shot on it or edited in an Avid system. That's not true because you can look at Saturday Night Live, which totally dumped Avid and Final Cut to go totally Premiere for their entire workflow.
Well, and a lot of places are doing that. And, you know, just like a lot of places are using some, like, the thing is, like, for movie studios and stuff, they have some leeway even with the software. I mean, they get custom software a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the same thing that you get even in a professional place. Like, they can actually be like, okay, we want this, but we want a machine that does exactly this, right? And then, like, Avid and whoever makes the computer, they get together because they have the money to spend on that.
Yes. Have you found the price of an Arri Alexa?
No, because you can't buy them.
Oh. you rent them totally?
It's just emoji making fun of you.
There's the Arri group, which I didn't even go to their website because I just figured it was just nothing but...
text.
But promotional Vistas. Stuff. But I'm looking here on the wiki page for it, and I don't even see anything about it. The Alexa 65 was introduced in 2014. It's available for rental only, like those from Panavision.
Well, there you go.
So there you go.
You can't go buy it, suckas.
Yep. Sensor has a 54.12 millimeter by 25.59 millimeter active image size, which is even larger than the film gate of the Arri 765 65 millimeter camera. Now that's still smaller than a 70 millimeter, but still.
They're carved from a single slab of marble.
Yeah, they have to be. Let's see. Marvel Studios announced that the Avengers Infinity War would be shot using a version of the camera built in collaboration with IMAX, making it the first time a full length theatrical film will be shot entirely in IMAX. Additionally, the Arri 65 will be used in sequences of the upcoming Rogue One and Captain America Civil War.
Right, because J.J. Abrams talked about shooting IMAX for the new Star Wars movie, but that obviously will not be full IMAX all moments.
Yeah, that's why
I said
certain elements.
Right. So, fun episode.
Beep-boop,
a lot of Star Wars. A lot of talk.
Beep-boop,
good beep-boop. Times. Anyone have any final comments?
Kill all the humans.
Nope. I think I don't know when this comes out, but we're gonna talk about
this week.
Okay, so we already like on a Friday. Is that okay? So this week, previously, we talked about Marvel Studios shuffling their peeps.
Oh, that
around.
Was earlier this week.
This week. So go listen to that if you want more film nerd movie talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Film nerd movie talk.
Go check that out. Major Spoilers Podcast. Where can you find that? Majorspoilers.com. Head over there right now after listening to this. You can find this episode on the podcast posting page. Give all your thoughts. We talked about a lot. We shouted about a lot of things. Surely you have a thought about some of the things we talked about. Why don't you type that out in the comments below? You know, we'll have a discussion on there. No one will use caps locks because that's just rude. While you're there, click on the Amazon.com shopping link. And buy all your fun Star Wars supplies. There's going to be a lot of merch out. You got to get it all.
Starting today, when you're listening to this, depending on when you're listening to this, today is the 24-hour Star Wars unveiling where it's all the way around the world in every time zone for 24 hours. They're unveiling new Star Wars merchandise.
Well, there you go. I'm sure some of that will be available on Amazon.com. When you buy
it,
not going to cost you any more. You're probably going to get some good shipping on that because obviously you're probably an Amazon Prime customer. You get that in 2 days. That's awesome.
Yeah, or
a day, because why
He's
not?
My favorite
this is the future.
Autobot, Amazon Prime.
not going to cost you an extra, but it will help Major Spoilers out to keep this content coming to you. So that's it for this week. I'm sure we'll have a great episode for you next week. See you then.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.